Okay, so you're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Musqueam people, and you're listening to Noise Complaint. So today we have Francis Baptiste on air, and my name is Mahalia. I will be hosting the show today.
I can go?
Hello. My name is Francis Baptiste. I'm here to sing you a couple songs from my latest album. I have an album in stores right now. It's called Syncleep the Trickster. And you can find it in record stores throughout Vancouver. It's at Red Cat Records and Neptune and Zulu and Audio Pile and wherever you find records in this wonderful city. Today, I believe, is the spring equinox, I think. First day of spring. It's got me thinking about spring a lot, and so I thought I would start my set today by sharing what I think of as a spring song for my first album. I have a song from my first album. It's called Weechum. Weechum is part of my indigenous language, Nisilkan. Weechum means digging for roots. I grew up on the Osoyoos Indian Band Reservation, and when I was a kid, one of our community elders, her name was Marianne, she'd bring us up to this part of our reservation that we called the Flats. It was like a plateau on the side of the valley. This is in the South Okanagan Valley. And she would show us how to look for speetlum. And speetlum is a traditional medicine that we used to steep teas. And it's a bitter root. And it's very hard to see because on the surface it's just little green leaves, but down below it's these little white pinkish tendrils that go into the earth, and that's speetlum, and we use that for medicine. I wrote this song years ago, and it's about being sick in your soul and in search of healing, in search of help. It's called Weechum. It means digging for roots.
Dig, dig, dig myself deep in the ground. I wanna dig, dig, dig myself deep in the ground. Thank you.
think I've been thinking about home a lot lately, and I find some of these songs. I haven't played that song really in a couple of years much, but I've been playing it a lot this week, and I've been thinking about home and thinking about the South Okanagan Valley and the Osiris Indian Band and all the people back there. And I find living away from home, that just kind of happens once in a while. You know, you kind of pine for it a little bit. But I'm here in Vancouver. I've been living here for 20 years, and I've been kind of making my own family out here. I have a son. His name is Finn, and he's 9, and I have a very loving partner named Brittany. And we live by Trout Lake in East Van, and very much living the East Van hipster lifestyle. And I've been struggling my whole life. I've been struggling with addiction. And so I write a lot of songs about addiction, about drinking and drugs and all that. And how hard it is to be a father and be an active addict or a recovering addict. Currently, I'm doing pretty good addiction-wise. I wrote this song. It's called Lie of Omission. And I think one of the things I've learned the most in the last year when it comes to addiction is that addiction really, it thrives in secrecy. It thrives in lies. The more you lie, the worse things get, especially when it comes to your addictions. When you start lying to your loved ones, lying to your partner and your friends and your family about what you're doing and hiding your addictive behaviors, you know, things start to get pretty dicey pretty quickly. And this next song, Lie of Omission, is about coming to terms with that. And just the first step is kind of admitting to yourself that you've been a really dishonest person, and dishonest as a partner, as a father. It's a real happy song.
For me and you, I mark another day off the calendar. Count the days past since I promised her. I've been lying to myself. A little too much these past few years, and I've been lying to everyone else to numb this pain. I'd do about anything. Sometimes my habits, they take control, and my indulgence becomes an excuse. For all the terrible things that I do, and so I battle myself. Lying to myself, a little too much these past few years, and I've been lying to everyone else to numb from this pain I'd do about anything. To numb this pain I'd do about anything. To numb this pain I'd do about anything.
Mentioned my son. It is currently spring break, in case you haven't noticed. Spring break used to be like a time for really fun things, you know, when I was younger. But since I've become a parent, it's like a nightmare. It's the worst time of year. It's so stressful because I can't afford any childcare. So it's just me and Finn all day, every day, just in each other's face. And we live in a very small space, so we're always arguing, we're always bickering, and sometimes we just want to, like, kill each other. But we love each other very much. I mean, you know, I would do anything for him. In fact, I have to take care of him, I think, because if anything ever happened to him, I would for sure be the prime suspect. I mean, like, the dad's always the prime suspect, right? So, you know, I'm looking after him, also looking after myself, my own best interests. He's a good boy. This song's called Wita. In my language, Wita means the oldest boy in the family. No, the youngest boy in the family. Finn is the youngest boy in my family. He's my Wita. And that's what this song is about. It's about him and I.
I ease my suffering, I wash my sins away, and wait for them to come again with the clarity pain can bring.
Speaking of spring, we got a garden plot recently, like our first ever garden plot, just up the street from our house. And Finn is really enjoying it. I'm kind of trying to teach him how to garden, teach myself how to garden. It's funny how much of parenting is reparenting, is what they call it these days. Like, in the process of teaching him things, I'm also teaching myself things. I'm also kind of trying to give him the type of parenting that I guess I lacked when I was growing up. I mean, no offense to my parents. My parents are wonderful. But they didn't really equip me with the skills for life, which probably is what led to most of my troubles. So I'm trying to make sure that I kind of give Finn the experience that I wish I had as a child. I've been coming up like super short on that for the most part, but at least I'm trying. And I find every time I try to teach him a lesson, I'm also trying to teach myself the same lesson. It feels almost like I'm speaking to myself to some degree. I mean, he basically is like a little Francis clone. It's like speaking into a mirror. And this next song is called Kitta Pimpooms. Kitta Pimpooms means brown eyes in Silkin. I was explaining to him that my eyes are brown, that his eyes are brown because my eyes are brown. And I had to explain the whole like genetics thing and all that. He refused to believe that I made him. I think it's a bit far-fetched for a child, especially because he's known me mostly as a bit of a screw-up. So the idea that I actually like made him seemed really far-fetched to him. But this song's called Brown Eyes, or Kitta Pimpooms, which means I'm trying my best as a parent. So I have this album out. It's called Sinclipe the Trickster. It's available in all the record stores in Vancouver. It's the first time I've ever put a vinyl out of a record, because pressing vinyl is like super expensive. So I've always just kind of had everything digital. But it feels really nice to have this physical totem of your efforts. And the cover looks really nice. It's like a picture of me and Finn having like story time. A big theme of the album is around oral traditions and passing on stories, passing on traditional knowledge, and all the other terrible things that you pass on. I mean, I find one of the most heartbreaking things about being a parent is everything I do gets imprinted on Finn, and that includes the good and the bad. So, like, I see my flaws slowly become his flaws, and I'm trying to be a better person so that he could be a better person, but it's not easy. I mean, everybody has flaws, and it's heartbreaking to see that process develop. You can never be a perfect person, even though you want to be for your children, but it's just not possible. So you try to mitigate your own personality shortcomings, I guess. Me, personally, I'm a very mischievous person, I guess. I'm really bad with authority. I get into a lot of trouble. Sinkleep means coyote in our oral tradition, and coyote is a very mischievous character. The title track is called The Trickster, and it's about Sinkleep and how much trouble he makes, and really about how much trouble I make.
Considering how ignorant you are, and I might lie just a little too much, but I'm smiling while you lose your I find trouble I find.
I'm just going to play one more song for you. My name is Francis Baptiste, by the way. I'm going to play a love song. I don't write many love songs. Too busy talking about myself all the time. But I do have a very loving partner. Her name is Brittany, and she puts up with me. I wrote her this song, and she said, "That's not a love song." I think it's a love song. I wrote it with the intent of love, and that's, I think, what is at the core of love songs. It's called Hopeless, and she said, "Why do you call it hopeless? Do you think our love is hopeless?" But I meant it more like in a, like a hopelessly in love, like a hopeless romantic kind of way. It's called Hopeless, and I know Brittany's not listening because she's at work, but later when I show her this on the internet somewhere, I love you. We're walking with our hands clutched. You're tripping on your feet. I've got a song stuck in my head, but I can't find the beat. I'm hopeless, so hopeless. The sun is shining through the clouds overhead. The city smells of rain. The roads are still wet. I've got so much to do, but I'm here with you instead. I'm hopeless, so hopeless. On your couch while you show me a song, and you notice I've been looking at you all along. There's just so much to like, I can't help myself. I'm hopeless, so hopeless. Right at a show, softly swaying with the band, my arms around your waist, your hips in my hands, the smell of the hair at the nape of your neck. I'm hopeless, so hopeless, so tripping on your feet. I've got a song stuck in my head, but I can't find the beat. I'm hopeless, so hopeless. The sun is shining through the clouds overhead. The city smells of rain. The roads are still wet. I've got so much to do, but I'm here with you instead. I'm hopeless, so hopeless, so. Think, is that a love song? I don't know. That's it for me. Thank you so much.
Okay, so that was Francis Baptiste, and you're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM. We're gonna play some ads and PSAs, and we'll be back for the interview.
What do you love, and what do you love about it? My name is Ewan, and with I Love You Hour, I want to know. Come join me bi-weekly Tuesdays at 6 p.m. to discuss music and the stories we connect to it, either in person, on the phone, or through messages at I Love You Hour on Instagram. That's ILUVU Hour on Instagram. Or through email at iluvhour@gmail.com. If you love sharing music and telling stories, listen to I Love You Hour bi-weekly at CITR 101.9. And remember, I love you.
I'm at Skype.
Bienvenido.
Una
tea.
You were invited to volunteer for Swissessism Garden. Get away from the rat race. Get back to the land. Heal. Reconnect with yourself. Touch grass. Find a quiet place among the plants and find a quiet place inside yourself. Check us out on Facebook at Indigenous Garden UBC Farm, or visit the Swissessism Indigenous Garden located at UBC Farm just off of Ross Road.
Young Agrarians is the largest educational resource network for new and young ecological farmers in Canada, with a long-term goal to stop farm loss and ensure future generations can farm. YA offers farmer-to-farmer programming to grow the next generation of food growers by creating access to community, education, on-farm training, land, business mentorship, and other resources. Join our network by checking out youngagrarians.org. That's YOUNGAGRARIANS.org. Together, let's grow the next generation of viable and ecological farmers on Turtle Island.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, yes, you are now rocking with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Rails, Jamal Steels, and Horsepower. You know what it is, all right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CITR 101.9, man. Turn up, turn up, turn up.
Okay, so you're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM, and I'm here with Francis Baptiste, and you're listening to Noise Complaint. So,
we're
just talking about your day job. How's that?
Yeah, I work for an organization, a men's wellness organization called the Dudes Club in the downtown East Side, and we provide a safe space for men to come and kind of get out of their SROs, single room occupancies, and kind of socialize in a safe space. It's mostly for older guys. And, you know, we come, cook a meal, play some bingo, and just kind of provide a space for wellness for those guys. And that's what I do during the day when I'm not here singing. It's been good, though. It's been a challenge. Spring break has made it very challenging to get anything done because I'm watching my son all day. And so, like, that kind of work-life balance gets kind of out of whack during spring break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
interesting.
It's been nice. It's been nice. We're going to the Okanagan next week to visit my mother and also to play the Ignite the Arts Music Festival, which is in Penticton.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's very fun. It's a very fun festival. I played it last year and played at the Dream Cafe, and it was a really good experience, really fun experience. There's so many other great artists, like any festival. It's one of those festivals where it's like a lot of different venues throughout the city.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like five or six different venues that you can just kind of all within like a few blocks of each other. So you spend the day just kind of going from one place to another and watching different music acts and enjoying some good food and good company. So I'm looking forward to that next week.
That's so sick. Mm-hmm. I wish I had to do school, but I wish I could check it out. Okay, so you mentioned your son quite mm-hmm. a bit, and he's yeah. even on your album covers.
Oh, speaking of which, I brought a present for you guys.
You did
a
not.
Fancy new, brand new
Wait.
Album.
Wait.
So yeah, there's a picture of me and Finn in silhouette on the cover of this album. And the whole idea is it's supposed to be like a depiction of me telling him a story and passing down some knowledge. There's such an important aspect of Indigenous culture, which is our oral traditions. In the Okanagan, we call them chaptik, which is our kind of word for traditional storytelling. And beyond just chaptik, I mean, the sharing of traditional knowledge is really important. And also just like the idea of an oral tradition, like as a kind of philosophy, it's very personal. It's very like, it's kind of the opposite of Western religions yeah. where everything is kind of literally by the book
yeah.
and dogmatic. People always ask, like, I've been trying to get more in touch with the creator, so to speak, and with my own spirituality and what it means to me.
Mm-hmm.
And people often ask, like, what is the creator? Is it just like your word for God, or like your word for like Jesus and God? And it's kind of like, it's a different way of thinking, I think. Because there's nothing written down. There's nothing like set in stone the way it is, say, in like Christianity or in any other Western religion, where you have what is essentially a rule book right. that everyone has to follow and that everybody argues about. Instead, you have an oral tradition that is passed down from generation to generation through stories, through talking to one another.
Yeah.
And within that generational passing, you have a framework for flexibility. And the way I tell a story might not be the way my dad tells a story or the way my grandfather tells a story. I just tell it the way that it needs to be told right now for the challenges that I'm facing and the challenges that my son is facing or the challenges I think my son faces. And that's the beauty of having an oral tradition, is there's that flexibility to it where everything, like a good poem or like a good song, everything is left up for interpretation, and it allows you to riff on it a bit. It's almost like playing jazz with your belief system, where like what you need today isn't necessarily what you need tomorrow, or what the last generation needs isn't necessarily the advice that this generation needs, because each generation faces its own unique challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about that a lot. And in the context of this album cover, I mean, we're just trying to convey this idea that that it's so important to pass on traditional knowledge. And it's difficult for me and Finn. I think we've had a couple like rough years. I speak a lot about addiction
yeah.
and the struggles between being a father, a full-time father, and trying to navigate my own recovery.
Yeah.
And I've had like good years and bad years, and all those different phases of our lives are kind of chronicled through my songwriting. So it's all there, I guess.
Yeah. No, I can totally, yeah. when you started talking about that while you were playing your set, I can totally relate, because my brother has been struggling. He's actually in rehab right now, so he's kind of been struggling with that as well. And so
yeah.
I really connected with what you said about that. And I think, yeah, art is a great way to work through that and express mm-hmm. that, especially with music. So
definitely. Like, good luck to your brother. It's so important to always be working on yourself. I think, like,
yeah.
most of the addicts I know, it really is like a lifelong journey. And there's no, like, it's not like a binary thing where,
yeah.
like, you're broken and then you're fixed. And
exactly.
You're not, it's never going to be a day where you wake up and you're like, I'm done. I did all the recovery stuff and now I'm all good for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of, it's not that simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
No, that's okay.
Drinking his Diet Coke is very burpy. But it's like, for example, like, just working at the Dudes Club
mm-hmm.
and being involved with groups and different organizations. I go to a lot of meetings at the Junction, which is a good place for recovery, at Robert Lilly Lee Medical Center on Broadway. And you meet guys who maybe are like 30 years sober
yeah.
or 10 years sober or like 10 hours sober. But we're all connecting because we're all in the same struggle, no matter what part of that journey, that recovery journey that you're on. I feel very fortunate right now that I'm in a healthy headspace, and that I've been sober since November.
Wow.
It's been about 4 or 5 months, which feels really good.
Yeah.
I feel very productive and very lucid in this weird kind of time warp, because like this album feels like it just came out. Mm-hmm. It basically did. It came out in August. I didn't get it printed to vinyl until a couple months ago. And I'm almost done the next album already.
Oh, wow.
Like, I've already finished the studio sessions. We recorded at 604 Studios here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And it's just getting mixed and mastered right now. So it should be done by the end of March, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fingers crossed. And it's very much an album that is more focused on addiction, I guess.
Yeah.
There are songs that talk about addiction on this album, but this was more of a family album or a fatherhood album. If anything, the theme of this album was fatherhood. And I felt like I kind of knew while I was making this album that I was like, the next album, I just want to focus on my own addictions and my own recovery, because I needed to do that as a person.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where, like, if you don't give recovery your attention, then it'll all spiral out of control really quickly.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, like, you'll have a couple months, like I'm at 4 or 5 months or whatever, but you'll have, like, 1 or 2 good months, and you're like, oh, I haven't drank in, like, 60 days or something. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of let your guard down, and you start thinking, I'm, like, a normal person now. Everything's good and wonderful. Yeah. And like I was saying earlier, like, I'm all fixed. It's all good.
Yeah.
And then you kind of relax a bit. And then something happens and you have a huge relapse.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you're like back down in the gutter again.
No. Yeah. It's interesting to look at that and understand that it's not like a linear process and
mm-hmm.
the ebbs and flows of that.
Yeah.
But how has it been kind of maneuvering addiction with the presence of your son and family?
It's been a struggle, especially like I mentioned in the set, like you worry a lot about like how traumatic everything is for Finn.
Yeah.
Like it's a little,
yeah.
I mean, every parent child coupling, like everyone has a bit of trauma with their folks. Like nobody gets through parenthood or childhood and was like, that went great. Everything was wonderful, right? like no one gets out of high school and is like, you know what? My upbringing was like perfect. It couldn't have gone better. Like
yeah.
A+. Like nobody does that. Everybody has some like shit that they end up having to deal with for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
But like with Finn, some of it's like super obvious where I'm like, oh yeah, well you had a dad that was drunk for a couple of years and was super irresponsible. And his situation with his mom is really complicated. It's not really something I want to go into details about because it's like airing dirty laundry.
Mm.
But like his sole guardian is me, and I'm like a very flawed person. And I'm kind of the only, I guess, role. I don't want to say role model. That sounds so weird and cheesy. Like father figure.
Yeah, like
but
figure.
Obviously I'm his father figure. I'm his father. But like, not a very good person to be steering the boat, I guess. And so that makes it kind of like, I'm sure it's not that bad. It's probably fine. If you're listening, child services, it's going wonderfully.
I think about the amount of that you speak about him and how much you use him to mm-hmm. inspire your music shows, like just how loving that relationship is.
I'm really glad I put him on the cover because he's like aged out of the age where he'll cooperate with anything I do.
Yeah.
Like, because he's 9 years old now. And like, we're already on the cusp of like, everything I do, he thinks is super lame. And he's super embarrassed by everything. Probably this photo shoot was the last thing that I could have like, hey, do you want to take some photos with me? And he's like, yeah, it sounds super fun. If I asked him today, he'd be like, oh, dad, that is so lame. This is so lame. Everything I do now is super lame. So I'm glad I got to like immortalize this moment with him before it was too late, But it is kind of fun being in this new phase of like embarrassment parenthood because now I really like to relish it. I think it's that trickster in me where I was like, oh, you find that embarrassing? Well, I'm going to lean into that a little bit.
I remember my parents doing that too.
He's like, he gets really mad if I don't turn off the music like a block before we get to the school.
Oh,
because
yeah.
apparently everything I listen to is super embarrassing. But like I listen to a lot of like kind of just whatever top 40 is happening right now because it's, I don't know, I'm falling into this like suburban dad mentality. So like, and he finds it all super embarrassing. And he tells me that it's like some girl is like, I heard you listening to that song when your dad pulled up.
Oh, and no.
He was like, got really angry about it. No. And I was like singing along in a car in my own little world. And I guess like the kids are already like, that song is so lame, you know. It was like that, that like Bruno Mars song.
Oh, the new one.
Yeah, yeah. I was listening to that on the radio and it super embarrassed him because I think it more the singing was embarrassing, but I don't know. But I sing a lot. And like I mentioned, like we live in a very small space.
Mm-hmm.
So like if I'm writing or rehearsing or anything, it drives him crazy.
Mm.
I have this like keyboard that I do like vocal warm ups on.
Oh, and sick.
He hates that more than anything in the world. As soon as he hears an A note on the keyboard, I'll sit at the keyboard and he'll be like, Dad, shut up. Exactly. Because our walls are super thin, right? So I can close all the walls, but it's like he still hears it all. And it's like I like to do it in the mornings to kind of wake up my vocal cords. And and he does not like that at all. But it does get him out of bed, so that's good.
I was going to ask, like, when did you first start playing guitar? Like, how long have you...
Oh, so long ago.
Yeah.
I'm so old. Every time I come to CITR, because it's all, like, kids, right? Not kids, but, like, I'm 40 years old. 40 years old, yes. 39? 40? I don't know. I'm 40 years old. I've been saying I'm 40 years old for a couple of years, so it must be it. But I started playing guitar when I was 14.
Oh, wow.
And it's interesting. Like, I was reflecting on this recently because it's, like, it was the first thing in my life that I was ever good at. So, like, my parents got me a guitar, and I took to it really quickly, and it just kind of, like, within the first, like, couple weeks, it was very, like, obvious. That, like, oh, this is, like, his thing now. Yeah. But, like, everybody in my life was super cautious about kind of like making sure I wasn't too into it or something. Like there's this kind of like, they're like, oh, it's nice that you play guitar.
Yeah.
But you need to have a real job or you need to have a real career path.
Yeah.
Like nobody is a professional musician. So, you know, so there's that kind of like frustrating thing, especially when you're a kid in a small town and you're like, this is the only thing I'm good at ever. Mm. And right away, though, people are like, oh, but that's not something you can do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, what am I going to do? Just like be an accountant? And I did that for years. I spent like a decade just being a web developer.
Wow.
Because I kind of like succumbed to this idea that like music wasn't really worth my time.
Mm-hmm.
And that I needed to focus on like a real job. And so I was like, web development's pretty easy. I'll just do that for a bit. And it was like miserable. Like my whole life was, I mean, no offense to anybody out there who's like working on a website right now.
No,
it's not that bad.
If your head's in a different place, like.
Yeah, but it just wasn't like for me. And it made it more frustrating because I felt like I knew what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But just that, like, I'd been convinced by outside forces that, like, it wasn't feasible or it wasn't a realistic, responsible thing to do, especially if you have a child. And they're like, how are you going to raise Finn, like, with the musician's income, right?
Wow.
And the answer is very poorly. That's very poorly. Living under the poverty line in East Vancouver.
Yeah, I feel like that's most people who are living in Vancouver.
See, it's everything's trending in my direction because now everybody's poor. So it's like it's this weird class divide in Vancouver. It's like everyone's either super rich or super poor.
I've noticed
and
that.
Like we're either struggling or you're like driving around your Cybertruck or some shit. Like,
oh my god, this don't get me started on this.
There's like two in my neighborhood. I see them every day. I'm like, there's all these protests outside the Tesla dealership. I drove by there the other day and there's like a whole mob of people who are like, we want Elon out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Uh-huh. Get him out.
I just watched this movie like two nights ago called Mickey 17.
Okay.
And there's a character in it, not to spoil it for anyone. Plug your ears. But there's a character that is like very obviously based off of like some kind of amalgamation of like Trump and Elon and that kind of one percenter, rogue space cowboy kind of person.
Zuckerberg.
And there's a point where it's like, where he's like does this very kind of like racist stuff. And I was like, man, this is like so like, because they must have made the movie before everyone started thinking Elon was like a Hail Hitler kind of guy, right? He did that like salute.
Oh my God.
But I bet like, when the movie maker, because like the movie finished shooting like a year ago, when he saw that, he's like, this is perfect. It, like it fits his narrative of his movie perfectly. It's like telling the future. Or oh like he God. Knew it. He's like, I knew it. It's a good movie. I check it out.
I should watch it. That sounds
really it's good. It's what's his name? The guy that made Parasite.
And, oh, okay.
Snowpiercer and all that stuff.
Yeah, he's awesome. Really liked
it. I never get to see movies anymore.
Yeah, I'm I feel like I don't have time to watch films. It sucks because, like, I used to be, like, before in university, I was, like, I took a gap year. So I was, like, an avid movie. I was, like, in the theater watching movies every week.
When I was, like, a web developer.
Yeah.
I would go to the movie, like, sometimes, like, at least a couple times a week.
Yeah.
Like, there were times, I remember with my partner at the time. Like, frequently, we'd be like, let's go watch a movie. Mm-hmm. And then we'd be like, we've seen everything. Like, everything everywhere in every theater. We're like, man, we watch a lot of movies. But not lately. I've had this weird crackpot theory that, like, Hollywood is just, like, lying about their numbers. Because, like, I go to a movie still often enough. I'll go to a movie on opening weekend, like, at a major theater, like Scotiabank. And it'll be, like, empty. Like, it'd just be me and, like, three or four other people on opening night. And then you'll see in the news, it'll be like, this movie made like $50 billion this weekend. Opening night made $20 million. And I'll be like,
is it real?
I'll be like, how? Like, what? Nobody's here, though.
Is
like,
it really, though?
Exactly. And then I'm like, is there like a third party polling all of these movie theaters? Like, is
I bet
it
it's just
real?
All like, of the know. Oscar committee it all, watching it over
to
and
all
over.
It all seemed like a scam to me. I'm like, how are these theaters still like. How are they in business? I don't understand. It's all popcorn. It's really a popcorn industry.
They're, the popcorn
it's like
is
a
getting
2,000% markup on popcorn. It costs
it's
like 2 cents.
Too much, bro.
Yeah. And I always pay it. I'm like $30 on popcorn? Sure, no problem.
Yeah, that's.
Like,
I'm complaining about it, but I will pay for it. And a drink.
Anyways, so, I have a new album out.
Yes. We should talk to you about your album. I have all these questions about your album, but I'm like, I've been talking about movies, popcorn.
I'm so like spacey in my thinking and everything. My partner just moved in a couple months ago.
Okay.
And now she's starting to understand. She's like, I'm like positive you have ADD. Your mind is just everywhere, leaving little piles of clothes and dust everywhere, like half cleaning things.
Yeah.
But anyways, this album is fantastic. You can get it at Red Cat, Audiopile, Neptune, Zulu.
Awesome. Yes, I listened to it. I thought it was amazing. I was going to...
It was tumultuous to make.
Yeah?
Yeah, we got a couple.
We got a couple minutes.
We got a minute.
I was going to ask, like, how your... I read up about how your native language is influencing your music.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right. Na Silkson.
Silkson. It's hard to pronounce. It's hard to speak. I can't speak it fluently.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of using songs as a way to spread, kind of to promote the language in a way.
Yeah.
Because it's an endangered language, and it's got a good, healthy uptick. Like, I was speaking to somebody at First Peoples Cultural Council, which is, like, the organization that funded this album, actually. And and they do a lot of work in language revitalization. And they were telling me that our language in South Okanagan is one of the ones that's trending upward in terms of the people starting to learn it, the people that are in their first year of trying to learn it, people including myself. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to learn it, trying to teach it to my son, and just learning little bits of vocabulary. And I find personally that incorporating it into a song just helps commit it to memory. So in the on the first album, I had a couple songs that were sung entirely in the Silken, and I found that approach is like a little too much.
Yeah.
Where like if someone gives you like a paragraph of words, you're like, I can't absorb all that information, right?
Right.
So on this album, I'm like, I'm just going to take a few key words and phrases and sprinkle them throughout the album, and then it's kind of makes it a little easier to remember, especially for my son and for myself. I mean, it's really hard to learn a language when you're 40 years old.
Yeah.
But so giving it more digestible little chunks where there every second song has an indigenous word in it.
Wow.
But it's not like a whole paragraph.
Right.
It'll just be like – it's like a vocabulary lesson, kind of like learning
– Interesting.
Like spelling.
Like, yeah.
I do a lot of prepping for spelling tests now.
That kind of connects too to the theme of the storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. That oral, it all comes together, right?
It all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having – well, for having me for coming in.
It's my station.
It's not my station either, but –
Thank you for having me, and thank you for allowing me to share some of my songs and some of my culture. A lot of the songs that I sang today are on this album, Sinclair the Trickster, that I mentioned is available in record stores throughout Vancouver. And, you know, I'm very proud of it, and I'd love for people to listen to it.
Yeah. I was also just going to note, like, I play guitar. I'm a big, like, finger picker.
Yeah.
Finger picking.
I don't know
how you say that. Anyway. And I noticed I was going to ask, like, what was – because people always remember the first finger-picking song they learned. I was going to ask, like, do you remember, or is it kind of just been something you've always been doing?
I don't know if I remember.
Yeah, anyway.
I cannot think of what it was. Mind you, it would have been, like, 20-plus years ago.
Okay.
So.
Anyway, it was beautiful what you were playing out there.
Yeah.
the things we forget. Oh, my God. All right. Well,
thank you.
Okay. Well, I just have to turn this off. So that was Francis Baptiste here live on air. And my name is Mahalia. I was hosting the show today. So you can also listen to it at citr.ca. It will be archived there. All right.